Hello, I'm Steve Punt.
And I'm Hugh Dennis.
With us are Susie Ruffle, Gareth Gwynne, Jake Yap and Gemma Arrowsmith. And this is...
The Now Show!
Thank you very much. Thank you. And something very odd happened this week. In America, where there is clearly no emergency of any sort, the president declared a national emergency.
Whereas here, where we're 5 weeks away from having to get our five a day from Fray Bentos pies, with vital decisions still not taken and our political system literally falling apart, we refuse to consider this any kind of emergency.
Yep, the government are still telling us...
Keep calm and carry on.
Or for no-deal Brexiteers...
Keep calm and tariffs on.
And no one knows what on earth Theresa May is playing at. She's either utterly hopeless or has nerves of steel. And in her head, I think it's clearly the latter. She imagines the final parliamentary showdown going like this.
Honourable members, I know what you're thinking. Does this amendment need six votes... or only five? Seeing as this is a no-deal Brexit, the most reckless economic gamble in the world, and will blow your car industry clean off, the question you have to ask yourselves is, do I feel lucky?
And at this point, she looks straight at Boris.
Well, do you, punk?
See, this is kind of what happens when a country that doesn't like change votes for massive change because it was told it could have massive change without much actually changing, and now that's changed.
Pretending that nothing would change has built up such pressure below the surface that the fault lines are cracking. And this week there was a sudden seismic shift. It all happened very fast.
Monday,
seven Labour MPs form an independent group.
Tuesday,
another Labour MP joins them.
Wednesday morning,
three Conservative MPs join them.
Wednesday evening,
the independent group are at 14% in the opinion polls.
Which is crazy, because their plan had only been to build a fan base and get an album out by the end of the summer. Chuckaramuna said,
if you're fed up with politics as usual, so are we.
And they immediately proved they wanted to do things differently by inadvertently timing their big launch to coincide with Honda's announcement that they were pulling out of the country with a loss of 3,500 jobs.
We are making a decisive break with normal political practice. We are launching this morning because this is the perfect day to bury good news.
But it was inevitable because the country is split. The Tories are split, Labour is split, even the people who split from Labour are split over why they split. All eight high-profile defectors...
Chuckaramuna.
Luciana Berger.
Chris Leslie.
And what's it?
Thingamy Bob, what's his face?
It's her, you know, thing.
And the other two cited a variety of reasons for their departure.
Anti-Semitism.
Brexit.
Machine politics.
Bullying.
In fact, the only thing they agreed on is whether or not you should scrape the mould off jam.
Although a few things need to be ironed out. The independent group abbreviates to the nickname TIG, TIG, meaning supporters will be known as Tiggers, which under the circumstances is possibly the most inappropriate name they could possibly have.
It is with a heavy heart that due to a culture of bullying and anti-Semitism, I am bouncing out of the Labour Party. Goodbye.
Of course, names and slogans are always difficult. The independent group opted for the slogan...
Politics is broken. Let's change it.
Which narrowly beat...
This isn't the Labour Party. This is the M&S Labour Party.
Of course, all this went down very badly in the Labour Party. Jeremy Corbyn said he was disappointed because at the last election...
saw us increase our vote by the largest share since 1945.
They lost the last election, by the way. Corbyn has got more mileage out of a defeat than Christopher Nolan did with Dunkirk. Owen Jones took the same tack, though, tweeting that in 2017...
Labour MPs won their seats with hugely increased majorities.
All of which is another reason the independent group MPs left. They understand that if you're in opposition, you can't win elections by winning bigger majorities in your own seats. You have to win other parties' seats... by by persuading other parties' voters to vote for you instead. And that's the bit that's difficult.
Oh, I wonder who's at the door.
All right, Tory scum.
We represent the inevitable triumph of progressive values over complacent enablers of capitalist oppression such as you.
You embody the regressive forces which we will sweep away.
Can we rely on your vote?
The 8 departing Labour MPs were harshly treated on Twitter, but there were people in the party who took a more conciliatory approach, or appeared to. John McDonnell said that what was needed was
a mammoth listening exercise.
Although if one of the criticisms of the party is that the leader is surrounded by a Stalinist clique, then I'm not sure that a listening exercise sounds that innocent.
Come in, control. Target will return home in around 1800 hours. Listening exercise is set. I have placed 3 bugs, 2 in the lampshades and 1 behind that picture frame. 1-2, 1-2. Can you hear this, control?
Loud and clear, thank you. And no need for the silly voice, Diane. We'll soon find out if any more of these bastards are thinking of leaving.
Or perhaps listening exercise just means a party official comes round to your house and says,
now, listen.
Just when the Tories thought it was Labour getting all the bad publicity this week, 3 of their MPs left too. The very best part was that at Prime Minister's Questions, just a couple of hours later, neither May nor Corbyn mentioned the defections once. It was the most British thing ever. Let's just ignore this inconvenient thing and hope that it might go away. Which, to be fair to Corbyn, is entirely consistent with his Brexit policy from the start.
Because, of course, at the root of all of it is the gigantic can of worms opener that is Brexit.
Not only are the country, parties and families split, even the demos are split now. There are anti-no-deal Brexit demos and there are pro-no-deal Brexit demos, although they're easy to tell apart. Pro-no-deal Brexit demonstrators
wear yellow vests and carry banners.
Anti-no-deal Brexit demonstrators
wear quilted vests and carry banners that are correctly spelt. What this week proved is that Brexit is reaching the panic stage.
You know that must be true when the President of the European Union is saying in public,
Brexit is in God's hands.
It does sound a bit worrying until you realise that that could be the long-awaited solution to the Irish backstop. If God really is all-seeing and all-knowing and willing to watch the Irish border for a bit... That would seem to be the perfect answer to checking lorries without the need for infrastructure or new technology.
That was easy.
Straight through the frictionless border, no problem.
Pull over, please. I need to see under that tarpaulin or I'll turn you into a pillar of salt.
And the best thing about the solution? The DUP would find it very difficult to object.
Thank you very much.
And now, please welcome back to The Now Show, fresh from his Radio 4 show, exploring key moments in history that never happened, it's Gareth Gwynne!
Thank you. Now, when this episode of The Now Show ends, there will be 844 hours until the UK leaves the European Union. To put that in perspective, there are 851 episodes of Doctor Who. Now, I'm not telling you how you should spend your time. I'm joking. There are 97 Doctor Who episodes missing. We're going to need to bulk it out with Torchwood. I want to talk about Europe, which British people are very good at doing. I wanted to use the BBC archive to see if the clues to Brexit were always there. My initial search for shows or packages about Europe brought up 30,000 results. Most of them from the last 8 weeks. So let's rewind to the 1st of January 1973 when a reporter went to Brussels to catch the moment we joined the European community.
At least the newest members of the European community made their presence known in a proper manner in one of the most British places in Brussels, the Queen Victoria pub opposite the Common Market headquarters.
Classic British behaviour. Go to Europe, find a British pub. Done.
Officially, we became members at midnight local time, but to make doubly sure, they kept things going for another hour until midnight Greenwich time sounded in London.
two celebrations. We did not hang about getting on that European gravy train. The Today programme managed to crowbar an EEC reference into every single item, no matter what it was.
Today we join the European community. So, here's a particular welcome to listeners from Holland and Belgium who already exercise with us and write regularly. Are you ready? And cross and up and beep and beep. Cross and up and reach up every time. Cross and up and beep.
I mean, I'm amazed the EU didn't trigger Article 50 that morning. Now, later that day, Radio 4 broadcast a special European-themed afternoon play, something optimistic and forward-thinking to represent a brand new start.
And on Radio 4 this evening, we mark the occasion with a performance of Goethe's tragedy, Egmont.
Goethe's tragedy, Egmont, that bodes well. Now, I didn't know anything about Egmont, so I decided to look it up.
The play ends on the hero's last call to fight for independence. His death as a martyr appears as a victory against oppression.
This was doomed from the start. Now, 1979 saw the first European Parliament elections. And to celebrate, BBC One made an hour-long prime-time celebrity quiz show just about European legislation. You're going to love this. So You Think You Know About Europe had two hosts, Cliff Mitchellmore and Mastermind's Magnus Magnusson. The hosts crack jokes to no audience while two teams of three awkwardly answer impossible questions. Sorry, no, wait, that's the Radio Times description of Only Connect. Every panellist was introduced with their relationship to Europe.
And on the far side, we've got Sir David Hunt, former diplomat. He's married to a Greek.
He's married to a Greek. So's the Queen. You don't need to bring it up. Almost all the panellists are married to Europeans. One team included Petula Clark, or to give her her full name...
Petula Clark, who is married to a Frenchman.
Now, each round concentrated on a different aspect of European life.
Well, now, on now to round two. For most of us, first-hand experience of Europe comes when we go there on holiday.
Oh, great. I love holidays.
But how much do we know about EEC regulations that might affect us there?
Absolutely nothing. Halfway through, they stop the quiz to interview the Director of Industrial Relations for the European Economic Community. You know, like they do on Mock the Week. Then the final round was about relationships.
Question two. You're a bachelor at large in Europe, and you fall madly in love with a 15-year-old Belgian girl. Her parents are implacably opposed to that match. In that case, how long would you have to wait before you could marry your Belgian Juliet?
The answer to that question is 10 years. You had to be 25 years old. I'll be honest, watching this programme with 21st century morality is a real roller coaster. Now, the show ended with an optimistic speech by Magnus Magnusson.
When we vote next week, we'll be voting for the future and for our children's future, because our children will perhaps grow up thinking of themselves as Europeans.
Don't be so sure, mate. The Euroscepticism in the archive comes when you least expect it. Here's Test Match Special from 2011, featuring Theresa May's favourite, Jeffrey Boycott.
I don't want to be part of Europe. I don't mind trading with them. We've got nothing in common with the French and Spanish. We've fought them for centuries, haven't we? The Armada and everything. Agincourt. Yeah, I don't mind people going on holiday there and trade and all that, but why do I want to be run by them? Why do I want to have francs and, you know? No, I don't want any lira and francs and what have you.
The lira hadn't existed for 9 years. And Agincourt happened in 1415. We shouldn't be cross with Geoffrey. He's still getting over the Battle of Bosworth Field. Now, all this made me wonder, what does the rest of the world think of us? So I spent last week watching and listening to international news. It was so bleak that I gave up. I went to the archive and I looked backwards instead, which I appreciate, is how Britain got into this mess in the first place. It's made me wonder what the last 3 months have done to Britain's reputation. And there is a huge problem here that we have to tackle, whether we are Leave or Remain. Should we start with Torchwood or save it until after David Tennant?
So if the last 2 years have taught us anything, is that if there's one way to cheer ourselves up about our imminent national cliff-edge collapse, it's to look at America. That usually works. And this week is no exception.
Yes, because you may remember that one of Donald Trump's big campaign promises was that he would bring manufacturing back to the United States, and he's doing his bit because he's manufactured an emergency. He made one of those speeches that just rambles on and makes no sense, but which becomes strangely hypnotic.
We need a wall. Walls work. We will work on the wall. We're building a wall. All in all, you're just another brick in the wall.
And then the bit he truly believes with all his heart.
We don't need no education.
Because the entire thing is made up to cover the failure of the great dealmaker to negotiate any funding deal for his wall. So he's invented a fictional emergency in the finest Hollywood tradition.
So in this scenario, there are far more people trying to get into our country today than ever before.
But that's wrong. There are 76% fewer people trying to get in than there were 18 years ago.
Well, where is the drama in that? We want tension. We want votes. So next, we cut to tremendous amounts of drugs flowing into our country.
Through border points, right?
No. On donkeys. Everyone loves donkeys. Cute donkeys. Cute donkeys carrying drugs.
But no one carries heroin through the desert on a donkey. They hide it in a truck.
No. They use donkeys. There's this thing called a drug mule.
Many commentators, pundits, Democrats, Republicans, and sentient life forms at all evolutionary levels have all pointed out that this is a dangerous precedent to set.
You see, it isn't an emergency, and it also isn't a wall, not technically. It's a fence made of slats with gaps in between. So far, 13 states have taken legal steps to stop Trump appropriating emergency funds to get the fence built, but it may be difficult to stop him because he's finding that a national security angle lets him get away with almost anything. This week, he again threatened tariffs of up to 25% on German cars because apparently they threaten national security.
Now, admittedly, there was a time when large numbers of German vehicles heading towards your country was not hugely desirable, but those times are gone, ladies and gentlemen, and those jokes are not okay until after March 29th. The rationale is that imported cars mean fewer American factories to make military vehicles, except that military vehicles aren't made in the same factory as normal cars. A big BMW may look like a tank, but it isn't one, no matter how much parents on the school run may want that added to the optional extras. The prediction is that imposing tariffs might actually damage the US economy, in which case Trump also wins because that will solve the immigrant problem by dealing with the prosperity that attracts those pesky immigrants to start with. You see, always thinking is the Donald.
It's also a possible explanation of the no-deal chaos here. Make the economy so bad that migrants simply aren't an issue. However, that is a tactic fraught with danger.
The financial headlines tonight, and in a shock move, the UK economy is struggling so badly, Mike Ashley has made a bid for it.
And now, taking a break from her sellout five-star show Nocturnal, would you please welcome to the stage Susie Ruffle?
This week, MPs resigned from the Labour Party. One of the reasons given was a culture of bullying, bigotry and intimidation. Post leaving the party, a lot of them came up against similar abuse online, and today I'm going to talk about Twitter, but more specifically, trolling. It seems that every woman that I know with any sort of online profile receives some sort of trolling on Twitter, even me. But you're not famous enough, Susie, I hear you cry, and that I find offensive. I have a another troll that gets in touch on a regular basis. Now, it all started because of Richard Hammond. And if you're not aware of who Richard Hammond is, he's on a TV show called Fast Cars and Grumpy Gits. And if you like Lamborghinis and lazy opinions, you're gonna love it. Last year, he was on his show and he said that he didn't eat ice cream because it was gay. Now, I took umbrage with that. I wanted to respond to his blatant homophobia online, but I don't want to cause offence, I don't want to be inflammatory, I don't want to start a row. I just wanted to say how I felt in a concise and dignified manner. So I just tweeted, I hope this pillock chokes on a magnum, with a link to Richard Hammond and a link to the news story. And then all of the trolls leapt to his defence. And my favourite one was John Up the Hammers, not a euphemism, as it turns out. And he tweeted at me, went, oh, God! Well, I assume he was shouting. He might have had caps lock stuck. He went, oh, God, you can't say anything these days without being racist, sexist or homophobic. And I thought, oh, John, what do you want to say? Because I've got a sneaky suspicion it might all be racist, sexist and homophobic. Now, on Twitter, you get a little biog to say something about who you are in the world. A little something from your heart to put out into the Twitter sphere. This is what John Up the Hammers had gone with. Hashtag free speech. Hashtag England for the English. Love West Ham. Hate Man U. Proud dad. Twitter biogs are amazing. I love them. Carol, 52, is just living her best life. And then there's a picture of a pug. I love it when they have animal pictures because I like to pretend that it's the animal's opinion. Just like, well, this poodle has some very worrying opinions on Brexit, but you've got to admit, his grasp of the English language is impressive. John Up the Hammers thinks that I'm promoting a gay lifestyle, which in many ways I am. I'm really coining in at the pink pound. He recently tweeted at me, you're a lesbian, you're a comedian, you're on TV. I thought, not nearly enough. He said, I suppose this is part of the lesbian agenda. Now, you're a Radio 4 audience. You're going to know this sort of thing. There is a lesbian agenda, okay? It was started by Sandy Toksvig, and it's comfy shoes for all. He said to me, there's too many gays on TV. I was like, it's not. It's five gay men and three posh lesbians. Fry, Norton, Cockcar, Grimmy, Toksvig, Balding, Perkins. Which is also my Gmail password. I said, mate, what's the problem with being gays on TV? He said, the problem is there's going to be more gays. I don't think that's how it works. I don't think you become what you watch. Because I've watched all of the Great British Bake Off and I'm not a cake. It begs the question, why do people feel the need to constantly share their opinion? Do you remember the good old days of just slagging someone off behind their back? I'd far prefer that. Tell Jean at work that you think I'm rubbish. Don't tell me. My self-esteem is already so low I have to make strangers laugh every night to feel good about myself. I've been trying to work out what it is that makes people want to abuse others online. And I think it could be, one, jealousy. My mother's sole reason for anyone not liking me, they're just probably jealous, Suze. They're not, they hate me. Two, they're scared of something that they don't know or understand. Or three, they are potential evil serial killers with sad, sad lives. Hello, John Up the Hammers. In fairness, though, it is not all bad on Twitter. Last month, American comic Patton Oswalt looked into someone who had been trolling him relentlessly online, and he found out they were having major health problems, and he donated to help with their medical expenses, paying it forward with positivity, and I really like that. So, John, if you're listening, and I assume you are, because for someone that apparently hates me, you really keep on top of my diary, maybe you and I aren't that different. Why don't we bury the hatchet and go for an ice cream? Thank you.
Now, earlier this week, a woman calling Nat West was refused a loan to go on a nutrition course to learn more about veganism and was instead informed that all vegans should be punched in the face. The reason for the banker's ire was apparently some highly inflammatory chalk drawings vegans had done near his home. Now, Nat West has apologised, offered compensation, started disciplinary action and promised henceforth only to buy lunch in Greggs. Here with more is your favourite vegan.
And he never mentions
no,
it.
No, he never, ever mentions it. Mr. Jake Yap!
Nat West Loans, how can I help today?
Well, I just did veganuary and it felt really good. Oh. It's nice to cut the violet silence from your diet. I'd like to get a loan from you to learn more if I could. There's a course just down the road to help me try it.
Ah, budding vegan? Well now, let me check. Tell you what, I'm gonna put yourself on hold for just one sec. Meat, 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 wallop, wallop, wallop. Petrol, guns, mines, blood, wallop, wallop, wallop. Plastic, 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 plastic. Hold on, turn it down, lads, this is going to be fantastic. I've just had a quick word with my supervisor. It's not the sort of thing we finance often. And even though he's far from being a vegan sympathiser, 0% interest's what he's offering.
So what does this mean?
Well, here's a clue. Guess how much interest we've got in giving a loan to you. Vegans, 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 wallop, wallop, wallop. Hippie, tippy, planet savers, wallop, wallop, wallop. Chalking on the pavement put me off my Sunday lunch. Punch, 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 punch. You don't bloody get it, darling, we're the ones in charge. You're saving bits of soap up while the bankers have it large. We literally make the money that makes the world go round. And we're the ones who'll shape the world with every single pound. Watch.
I'd like to mine the Arctic and export loads of nukes.
My friend, I'd be delighted to have you on my books. Buy yourself some palm oil.
But orangutans are sad.
We're disaster capitalists and we're a greedy bunch. But vegans are vegans. Come here, love. Punch, 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 punch.
You may have seen that in the United States there is apparently a health craze in which people are injecting themselves with the blood plasma of teenagers in the hope this will ward off the effects of aging. But why are people so obsessed with trying to stay young? We've asked our audience here tonight what benefits they have noticed from getting older.
I can afford the blood plasma of teenagers.
This person's written... You can revel in the predictable failures of the young.
The older I get, the less visible I become. I am now a cat burglar.
Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to The Now Show, starring Steve Punk, Hugh Dennis, Susie Ruffle, Gareth Gwynne, Jake Yap, and Gemma Arrowsmith. It was written by the cast with additional material from Jack Bernhardt, Laura Major, Essex Sears, Catherine Brinkworth, and Kat Sadler. The producer was Adnan Ahmed, and it was a BBC Studios production.